Orange Taxi, a new taxi company providing services to the U of I campus and the Champaign-Urbana area 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at 367-8888.
Good morning and welcome to Focus 580. It's our morning talk program. My name's David Inge. Glad to have you with us. We're also pleased to welcome back to the program Sandy Mason. She is a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. And monthly is here, always on Tuesday, to talk about lawn and garden care and generally things that grow in the home landscape. So if you have a question, maybe you're still thinking about last year. You got some problem that needs to be solved. Maybe you are already thinking about the next growing season. You're thinking about the things that perhaps you would like to plant. You have those sorts of questions, that would be great. We also could take people who have houseplant questions. We could do that too. Anything that grows inside, outside, you can call in and talk with Sandy. 333-9455. That's the Champaign-Urbana number. We do also have a toll-free line. That means no matter where you might happen to be listening, you can call in and we'll pay for the call. 800-222-9455. 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL. Welcome back.
Good morning.
It's good to have you here. I have a question here that's left over from a recent gardening program that Celeste did when she last had Chuck and Di on the program. She refers to Chuck Voigt and Diane Nolan. She refers to them as Chuck and Di. And they were here, and this was a question that came in by email and didn't get on. And I thought, well, maybe we could try and do it here with you this morning from a listener who says she has a gold flame honeysuckle that's gotten so big that it's fallen over and it broke the trellis that it was on. So she says, well, first of all, I need to get the old trellis out and build something that's new and stronger. And she wants to know, when is the best time to do that? Does this bloom on old wood or new wood? And wants to know what would happen if she cut it back substantially. And any other advice that you might have.
Mm-hmm. And I have a gold flame honeysuckle, and it is. They get absolutely huge. They actually bloom on old wood and new wood both. So you'd, mm-hmm. you'd get better flowering if you waited until after they did that initial flush of flowering and then did some pruning. But I actually cut mine back early in the season just because it was easier and I had time. And I still managed to put on some good blooms and actually pretty good growth. And I don't think you can hardly kill those things. It really is one of those vines where you can really do a lot with them. And I did some pretty major pruning, probably about 8 inches or so. I left and it came back beautifully. So it's probably a good thing on a lot of vines to do that, just to sort of clean up some of that dead stuff. You know, no matter how vigorous they're growing, you always end up with some dead stuff and they'll just look better.
Okay. Well, I hope that that provides the answer to the question. Other folks, in fact, we already have some people ready to go here, are invited to call. And again, here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. The first caller is in Chicago. We'll go right there, line number 4. Hello.
Good morning.
Mm-hmm.
I've got sort of a puzzling problem. What kind of a house plant could I grow in an apartment that the humidity is very low and I like to put some moisture in the air? Is there any kind of a plant that would sit in a pan of water and would grow? And also humidify the place.
Sure. If you're actually wanting something that can actually grow in water, there's a papyrus. There actually is a dwarf one. The real one is huge. It's a big tropical plant. But you can get a dwarf one, and it actually grows right in water. Actually, you put the pot in another container that has water, and it does very well that way. So that certainly would be one plant that you might think about. I'm trying to think if there's any other ones that actually grow right in water. There's a lot of them that you can sort of grow in water. They'd probably be better if you don't. You know, even that bamboo, you know, you see that ornamental bamboo these days, you know, just about everywhere has those little chunks of bamboo for sale. Even those kind of things will grow in right in water. I've seen some of the peace lilies growing in water. So they're not traditionally water plants, but those would certainly be ones you could do that with. Any plant, if you want to go ahead and just use a pie pan or something, or decorative container with the pebbles and then put water underneath it. Really, any of the plants are going to do well in that kind of situation.
Is there a water lily or something like that? I'm trying to picture like a dish pan.
Yeah.
But plants in it and also putting moisture in the air.
Yeah, they'll certainly, the water lilies and stuff will certainly do okay. It's just, the problem is the light levels aren't high enough where you're going to get where you're going to get flowering. So you'd have the foliage for some of those tropical lilies, but they're not going to be quite as dramatic as you might think if they're outside. So,
well, I'm facing north, so there's no light there.
Yeah, pretty low light. I think you might be have a hard time with some of the water lilies because of the low light, unless you had some supplemental lighting.
I see. Are these available in plant stores here? Not in a supermarket, though.
Yeah, probably going to have to go more to a garden center type. For some of these, you might actually have to check out some catalogs, some of that online for some of these more specialty things.
All right. Thank you very much.
Yeah, good luck.
All right, very
all
good.
Right.
Let's go to Woodford County. This is line number one. Hello.
Hi, Sandy.
Hi.
I've got a question. Last fall, we went to the U of I garden on Lincoln Avenue, and there was two things I was interested there. There was a blue switchgrass, and I've been looking for it. And would you know what the Latin name for that would be?
It's Panicum virgatum.
Virgatum. And, and would that be the blue variety?
It probably is. Right offhand, I don't know. I'm trying to think of which one. Do you remember where it was?
It was in that first garden that's got like four sections to it.
Yeah.
But that Panicum virgatum is what I've found in a Thompson and Morgan one. But they don't call it blue switchgrass.
Right, but it's going to have a cultivar name after it that implies that it's blue, that it's been selected for its blueness.
Okay.
If that makes any sense.
So if it says Panicum virgatum, it might be just plain switchgrass.
Yeah, it probably is. If it just says Panicum virgatum, it's just a plain old switchgrass. This is a prairie plant, and you're going to get any variance of color, and it's probably not going to be blue. There's one called Heavy Metal that's been around for a long time that has more of a steely blue color to it. So you're going to have to look for something that says, like, switchgrass Heavy Metal or something like that. You're going to have to look for a cultivar.
Okay, any idea where you would look for something like that?
There's certainly a lot, probably, you know, I'm not sure exactly where you are in the relation to other garden centers, but as the season progresses, garden centers, there's certainly Kurt Blumel is probably one of the big suppliers of a lot of ornamental grasses. I'm sure you can find him online and probably order things online.
How do you spell that?
It's Kurt with a K, K-U-R-T, and then Blumel, I think, is B-L-U-M-E-L.
Okay.
Or somewhere close to that.
Okay. Also in that garden, and this is one I found, is a buckthorn called Rhamnus frangula columnaris. And we thought it was really interesting. We liked the way the look, but buckthorn is also a host for soybean aphids. Is this different than the one that's a host for soybean aphids?
I'm not sure if that exactly species. There's lots of buckthorns out there, and I'm not sure if that one is actually one of the species that's been listed. That one certainly has been in the trade for a long time, that particular species. I know even some of the other buckthorns are actually on the exotic weed list now.
Okay.
So that one I'd be really careful with. We'll have to, and actually I should look into that to see where we are on that.
Okay.
Since that is one of our newer pests these days. So,
yeah.
I more than likely I would be concerned about growing any kind of buckthorn right now.
Okay. And my last question is, do you have any idea if you could grow bald cypress as a bonsai?
As a bonsai?
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure I've seen bald cypress as a bonsai.
Okay, good.
So that would, and it'd be lovely.
That's something, you could let it stand in water so you wouldn't have to be so careful about keeping it watered.
Yeah, there'd be some advantages there, I'm sure.
Okay. Thank you very much.
So, yeah, good luck.
All right. Thanks for the call. The guest this morning here in this hour, Focus 580, Sandy Mason. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. Once a month, as always a Tuesday, she's here. We talk about lawn and garden care, things that grow in the home landscape, houseplants, we could do that too. Whatever questions you might have, give us a call. Here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line, so if it would be long-distance call, use that number. That's 800-222-9455. We have another caller here standing by, someone in Urbana, line two. Hello.
Good morning.
Mm-hmm.
In celebration of your extending your visits through the winter, and in celebration of the current weather, I thought I'd call and talk with you about the variance from our specific winter hardiness zone. I'm trying to landscape an area around a fairly big stone-faced building, and wondering what's your experience or what you've heard of plants in zone hardy to zone 6 or even 7 around here, if you're in the middle of the city, if you're near a building, perhaps the south-facing side of a stone building that will reflect light and certainly absorb and reflect heat. What sort of things have you grown or heard being grown that are not necessarily hardy to zone 5?
Right. And, you know, hardiness is one of those things that I think we're finding out more and more. It's kind of a moving target on some of these things. And I'm not sure if you're familiar with some of the crinum bulbs. It's a very popular bulb, kind of looks like a resurrection lily, amazing ladies, whatever you want to call it. And I've heard of people actually growing, and they're supposed to be just zone 6, zone 7, and I've heard of people actually growing those outside. But again, very protected site, well-drained soil. I think sometimes we have these fairly mild winters from time to time, and sometimes we get away with things, and then after the fourth or fifth year, it dies or something because we end up with a really colder winter. So my feeling is try it. That's always my feeling. Just try it.
It's easy enough to try with bulbs, forbs, herbs, things that are fairly small and fairly cheap. But I'm working on shrubs and trees.
Yeah.
You don't want to commit yourself to those.
Right. And what you may find, I would be, something that's maybe zone 6, I'd be willing to maybe try on, depending on how badly I wanted it and depending on what microclimate I feel it might be there. And certainly you're talking about that, having those areas that are going to warm up more, hang on to the warmth longer. And those in very protected sites, and sometimes you can get away with those plants. And sometimes what we'll find is things like with crepe myrtle is, which normally would be a tree down south, you know, the top part isn't as hardy, and so, but the roots are. And so they end up acting like a peony or butterfly bush or something like that because the top just dies off each year. So I'd be a little bit concerned about other things that I'd also be really concerned about if it's a flowering plant that blooms on old wood. I'd probably be very concerned about that, and I might, and if it was expensive, I probably wouldn't try that.
Okay. So
if it's a flowering plant,
that count.
Right, because it's going to winter kill. It may winter kill the flower buds. If it was something that bloomed on new wood and I thought I could get at least some semblance of growth in the summer, then it might be all right. So that would be one thing to look for. But, you know, it really is one of those things. I think we're going to find out more and more that there's plants. We have plants out at the Idea Garden that people told us 5 or 6 years ago that they were not hardy. They're just not going to live. They've done beautifully. So it is that kind of moving target. And I think sometimes it really has to do with also the soil. There's some plants that are perfectly hardy. They'll stand the cold, but they hate wet soils in the wintertime, which is tend to be what we have. And for those plants, they die out because of the wet soil, not because it's so cold.
So you have to build your site, lift it a bit, amend it a bit, and do all you can for drainage.
Right, but do your homework as far as the plant. Where's its natural range? Where does it really come from? If it comes from a mountainous area somewhere, then that's a plant that wants well-drained soil. So those are the kinds of things you kind of have to look for. Where did it come from? And I think that's probably a better indicator than sometimes what the catalogs tell us as far as hardiness. Really look, where did the plant come from? And what is it? What did it evolve under? What kind of conditions did it evolve under? And that's probably your best bet.
Thanks for the time.
Hey, right, good luck. You. Have fun.
Other questions are welcome. 333-9455. Toll free, 800-222-9455. Well, we're waiting to see if we can get some more callers. Do you want to talk a little bit about things, events?
Stuff coming up. We always have, you know, it's that time of year. We can't garden, but we'll certainly talk about gardening. Here coming up very soon, actually this Saturday, the Crawford County Master Gardeners are having their A Winter Day in the Garden, and that's going to be held as part of in Robinson. And their phone number is 618-1549, and I don't have the full phone number, so you're going to have to check with the Crawford County Master Gardeners. It's 618-1549. Must be 217 area code? Must be. 618-1549? in Robinson, Illinois. That's this Saturday, January 22nd in Robinson, Illinois. And then the next Saturday is January 29th is going to be the University of Illinois Herb Day at the Holiday Inn in Urbana. And that's always a great lineup. They always have good food, and you can learn all about cooking and growing and using herbs. And that one fills up fairly quickly. So if you haven't registered for that, I'd really encourage you to do that. And you can email Carol Preston at preston1@uiuc.edu. And that's the U of I Herb Day. So that's another good thing. And then our Master Gardeners are having a wonderful program in March 5th, which seems like a long way off, but it really isn't. Think about it. It's not really that far off. February is a short month.
Yeah.
It won't be too bad.
Yeah, okay.
That is going to be our Breath of Spring. You'll be ready for that March 5th, and that is also at the Holiday Inn in Urbana. We have a great lineup of speakers. Ken Drews is probably a name that people might be familiar with. He's done a zillion books. If you go to any of the garden sections in the bookstores, you'll see Ken Drews' name, and he's done everything from plant propagation books. He's done The Natural Shade Garden, 80 Great Collector's Garden Plants, ton of books out there. His newest one is called The Passion for Gardening. And it's really kind of his, you know, the things that he's learned from other gardeners, how they've sort of enriched their homes and hearts and minds by gardening. Mm-hmm. He's a wonderful photographer, too. So I think that's the great thing about Ken Drews' books. Tony Avent will also be there on March 5th for our Garden Day. And he's an international plant explorer and also has Plant Delights Nursery, which is really a great place for unique plants. So Plant Delights Nursery out of North Carolina. Carol Reese is a University of Tennessee Extension person. I think people will find her. She's a very, very funny lady, but also knows quite a bit about landscaping. And then Erica Glasner, who appears on Victory Garden from time to time and then also is on HGTV. So that's Saturday, March 5th, our Garden Day.
Okay.
And they can call us at 217-333-7672.
All right. 333-7672. That's the number for Cooperative Extension in Champaign County. And
that's March 5th.
So that's the plan. And again, if you want information on any of these events or you have other kinds of questions, the kinds of things that we deal with here when Sandy's on the program, you can call her or, depending on where you live, your local extension person, and they will help you out. They'll try.
But they can call you.
Oh, yeah. They can call me. Call Dave. And then I'll just
His
forward you.
His home phone number is.
Don't do that. I will just forward you to the lovely and talented, my spring beauty, ladies and gentlemen, Sandy Mason. Now, we have another caller up in Sycamore. Let's do that here. Line number 4. Hello.
Yes, good morning.
Mm-hmm.
I have a grass that I love. It's called Carl Forrester.
Mm-hmm.
And I picked it because it has a very nice vertical kind of shape.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a little narrow strip of land, which was on the southeast side of a small attached greenhouse, and it's very dry there. But my Carl Forrester flops every summer.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know, am I doing something culturally wrong for it?
Mm-hmm. Is it in? It's in full sun, did you say?
It's in pretty much full sun. The sun has to swing around the greenhouse, but it is. From, you know, maybe about 11 o'clock on and the rest of the afternoon, it really gets pretty cooked over there because I had decided to put grasses there because flowers just didn't work unless I watered them about twice a day.
So I haven't seen that happen before, to be honest with you. You don't fertilize them or anything, do you? So
no,
that's
I
not
haven't
an issue.
Been at all.
Haven't done any kind of fertilization. Those would be the things that usually causes plants to flop. Now, has it? You've had this for several years, and it does it every year,
yeah.
Or
when they were first in there, they didn't seem to do it, and then as they got larger, now they've been in there maybe 3-4 years,
and they flop every year.
Yeah, they seem to, like, sprawl, and they don't keep that nice vertical shape.
Yeah, it may be just a sun issue, is what I'm guessing, that it's just maybe not getting as much sun. Other than that, I'm not sure there's too many other things that you can do for it, unless it's just, it almost sounds like it's almost growing too well, too, if you have really rich soil.
It's a very dry spot, so periodically I do try to give it, some good watering, not too much, but... And I wondered if maybe it really prefers to be really dry.
I'd quit watering it. That'd be one way to slow it down. Because sometimes when plants just start growing, because that typically, you know, some grasses just naturally do that. But that's one that typically stands up pretty darn upright.
Everywhere I see it growing, it stands so beautifully upright. And mine just wants to just fall all over.
Right. I think I'd just quit watering it and let it Let it just hang out. Because especially, you know, it's a cooler season grass, so it comes up earlier, too, than some of the other ones.
Okay.
Yeah.
The other thing is it seems like it gets a little disease on it that looks like a rust as the summer progresses. Is there anything I can do to prevent that?
That would be another thing. Now, do you normally cut it down, I assume, every year?
I do, yeah. I do in the fall. I cut it all back.
Okay. So that's good. So you should be getting rid of a lot of that stuff. I have not heard a real problem with rust on Carl Forrester before. I guess that would be another reason why I'd quit watering it.
Okay.
Because the drier they are, the less disease you normally will have. So
okay.
That would be another thing, because I wouldn't imagine you'd get to the point where you have to, you know, use any fungicide on them.
Yeah, I haven't sprayed them with anything.
Yeah, I would, and I'd also really find out what it is. There could be something else going on there.
Okay. I have one other quick question. Hostas, deer love hostas. Mm-hmm. Have you ever heard of any varieties that they tend to stay away from?
Wow. Not that I know of.
They love it like lettuce.
I wish maybe there's a hosta grower out there that's had some experience with it. They don't seem to bother a certain one, but as far as I know, they pretty well pick on all of them.
Yeah, they seem to be at the top of their menu.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Yeah. Okay, well, thank you very much.
All right, thanks for the call. I'm back here to cell phone caller here. This is line number one. Hi.
Thank you very much for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm a first-time listener, and this is a fascinating program.
Great.
I have a 100-year-old home in Charleston, Illinois, and we have an area 20 by 40 on the north side of the house that continually goes back to moss. And we've had it turned over by a landscaper, but it just seems to return to the moss. There are a couple of ferns that will grow up that have been there for probably 60 years, and they keep poking back right along the drip line of the eave of the house. And a little bit of lily of the valley that's volunteer have thickened up in there. But and I have a high bush cranberry that's probably about 60 years old, and we cut it back, but it's kind of scraggly. Should we dig everything out, the soil out, and put in new soil, or what would you recommend, and what about planting?
Now, when they've dug this up, did you put grass seed back in, or what did you put back in?
Yes, they treated the soil, and they put grass seed throughout on our whole yard.
Okay. And did the grass come up?
Yes, it came up, and we treated it for 2 years and felt very guilty about chemically treating our yard.
And you were treating it with?
Well, I really don't know. We had hired the landscaper to do that. 4, 5, 6 times a year.
It was to kill off the moss, or it was to do something?
Well, it took care of all of the crabgrasses and, you know, foreign items, and also took care of the moss at the time.
Well, I think the one thing with moss is that it really comes in when there's an open area. And it likes those cool, moist areas, and often on the north side or underneath trees or whatever, where other things really aren't growing very well. So the moss itself really isn't the problem. It may seem like the problem because it kind of just stretches out all over the place, but it's just coming in. Because if you look at moss, it has virtually no roots. I mean, there's really nothing there that does much in the way of competing with anything. It's just an open area, and it comes in, and the environment's right, and it grows. So I would really wonder, you know, why isn't the grass growing? Is it just too darn shady? Does it get some sun, or it's just...
Well, it gets very little, but there's an awful lot of clay in the soil, and the grass is there, but it's very, very fine with spots of this moss everywhere, and that's why we thought about maybe digging down 6 inches or so and putting in a different mix of topsoil or something along those lines.
Well, certainly that might be something that could be done. And certainly with clay soils, they tend to stay moister longer, which the moss would like because it stays moist and all that.
Right.
So the moss certainly likes that. But I'd still wonder why the grass isn't growing better if you've done all this stuff and it's not growing better. I'd almost guess there's just not enough light there. And so you may want to start thinking about some shade-loving plants somewhere along the line. This obviously sounds like a very large area, so I'm not sure what all you'd like to do. But I think you'd be, rather than fighting kind of the situation, I think I would start thinking about some shade garden areas, some paths through those areas. You could do some very nice things and not have to struggle so much. Because even if you change the soil, if there's not enough light, the grass isn't going to grow well. Even shade-loving grass needs at least 4 hours of sun to do something.
Would you have anything that you would suggest in terms of a large shrubs or a small tree or something that would go in that area?
Mm-hmm. I think any of the smaller trees would do just fine. If you're interested in red buds, it might be a nice place for a dogwood. You know, they actually, dogwoods will tolerate some, certainly tolerate shade, and also don't do bad in clay soils as long as it's not too terribly wet. So, you know, some of those smaller trees I think would be very nice.
Okay.
There's a black haw viburnum, which is a small tree, large shrub that I think is quite beautiful and is an understory plant, so it doesn't mind shade at all. So you might think about some of those.
I'll take a look at those. Thank you very much.
And then maybe think about adding some of these, you know, whether it's hostas or some of the shade-loving plants. And then just, I think you'll find that more and more you fill in that area with other plants that you find you won't have as much moss.
Okay. Those are wonderful suggestions, and I appreciate all the ideas.
Okay.
Thank you so very much.
Good luck.
Okay, thank you. We're a little bit past the midpoint here of this part of Focus 580. Our guest is Sandy Mason. She is horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. Once a month on a Tuesday, she's here. We talk about lawn and garden care, things that grow in the home landscape. Houseplant questions are okay, too. 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line. Good anywhere that you can hear us. That's 800-222-9455. Next is someone listening in Champaign. Line 2.
Good morning.
Yes.
Good morning.
In the recent ice storm we had a week or two ago, I had some tree damage. Some large branches came down. So I imagine at one point I'd need to get the tree trimmed because I think it is bad to have those jagged, broken edges. Doesn't that make the tree more susceptible to disease?
Well, it's just if you can get those cleaned up a little bit, it actually sort of, you know, plants don't heal the way we do, but they certainly would sort of fill in that area much faster if it's clean rather than these jagged cuts.
So it is something I should have done. And so
it really is better for the tree. And you don't want any stubs. If it's sort of left out a little stub or something along those lines, that really needs to be cleaned up.
So I guess my I've considered, rather than having it done sooner, since it's the middle of the winter, I think there's no rush and perhaps it might get more damage, so I'm figuring why pay now and then pay again later if I get more tree damage.
Mm-hmm.
So is there any problem with waiting, you know, as long as I do it before springtime?
I think that's fine, you know, as long as it's, you don't have anything hanging that obviously it might be a problem for property or yourself or for something, you know, falling on someone. I think as long as that's not an issue, and also as long as there isn't one that's sort of just hanging there, because sometimes if you've noticed when they sort of hang there and then they fall, it strips the bark underneath, and that's not good. So if you don't really have any of those, there really isn't a problem if you want to go ahead and wait till later.
All right. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And to Downs. This is the next caller. Line number 3. Hello.
Hi. Mm-hmm. I wanted to tell you about the McLean County Master Gardeners Lawn and Garden Day.
Okay.
That is on February 19th, and it's at Heartland Community College. And the number for information is 663-8306.
And that's 309 area code.
Right, and that's the McLean County Extension Office. And Diane Nolan is going to be here.
Oh, it's always a great day.
Yes, and that's the only one I know about because I had to send my brochure back with
registration. So people can find out, thank you for that, people can find out all kinds of info this time of year.
Right, she's doing a keynote speech and a couple of workshops, I believe, and then there are other people doing workshops.
Good.
And I have a question. I have a variegated porcelain vine, which is doing fine, but I just read that it is invasive. Now, I knew that non-variegated was considered invasive, but I had read that the variegated one was not. And I live at the edge of a woods, and I certainly don't want this thing going rampant, you know, in the woods.
Yeah, I would be thinking about replacing it.
Okay.
And it's mainly because of the berries. And I've seen the variegated produce berries as well as the non-variegated.
Yeah, it does
one.
Have berries.
Yeah, and the trouble is the birds eat them, and then it's like everywhere. And plus, the Japanese beetles love porcelain vine too, so
they do.
Yeah, so they've gotten to be a plant that's probably needs to be replaced.
It's been so beautiful.
I know you're. I mean, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. They are quite pretty.
Okay,
but you may want to think about something else.
It goes.
Yeah. I mean, I know people may think this is also another weed, but there is a variegated morning glory that actually looks quite pretty. They tend to be, you know, they produce lots of seeds, and you may have some that come up right there, but as far as I know, it doesn't spread out like we get with porcelain vine or some of the other ones.
I have morning glory everywhere.
But there's a variegated one. That's very pretty. It has pink flowers and variegated fall. I was just trying to think if you wanted something that was variegated.
No, it's not. What I'm really looking for is vines that will take some shade, since we have a lot of shade.
Mm-hmm.
And
have you ever tried the hydrangea? Climbing hydrangea?
Oh, I have several of those.
Oh, they take shade.
They're so different. This one will grow up an arbor, mm-hmm. you know, much better than a.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. I've got hydrangeas on trees, and then on a retaining wall.
Oh, great!
That's
great.
They've done very
great plant.
Well, but. I'm always looking for shade things, and mm-hmm. done so well in kind of an east side, northeast
mm-hmm.
side.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay.
Yeah, well.
Too bad.
Oh, well.
Well, thanks,
Nico. If you have any other ideas for shade vines, let me know.
Yeah, I was just trying to think, and right offhand, I can't think of anything else.
I know, it's a problem. Yeah. Okay, thank you.
All right, well, again, the folks here who are listening, you have questions, you can give us a call, 333-9455, toll free. 800-222-9455. Well, the weather we've been having, it's totally wacky. You just don't know what it's going to be like. A week ago, it was in the 60s, and now it's current temperature outside 13.
Wow. Hey!
Shot what, right up to 13.
The double digits.
And so I guess I'm wondering if, you know, it's not impossible. Next week it could be 60 again. Maybe you probably won't. But what I'm thinking about is if we got maybe one or two days that were kind of warm enough so people could get outside and do something. I mean, is there anything in particular that you would say, well, yes, actually, if you get a good day and you want to, there are some things that you could be doing.
We really are getting to the point where people can think about pruning. So if they do have some things that need some dormant pruning, they certainly could do that if we get a day where they feel like they want to go outside and deal with it. And normally those are those plants that, you know, either bloom later on in the season. You wouldn't want to do anything like lilac, forsythia, any of the ones that bloom early. But certainly pruning is something can easily be done. Also could do grapes. If you need grapes that need to be pruned, that would be another thing. And just even some general cleanup kinds of things, because especially after the ice, sometimes things are just not, even our perennials that might normally look good over the winter don't look all that great. So certainly any of the general cleanup stuff could certainly be done now, too.
Okay. We have another caller here, and this person is listening this morning, I believe, in Urbana, and that would be line number one. Hello.
Hi. I wanted to relate two experiments that I performed that were successful. One has to do with Christmas trees, and I'm thinking, you know, these Christmas trees are cut a long time before Christmas, and they're sitting out on these Christmas tree lots.
Mm-hmm.
And so and it seems to me that it's a lot of work to put the thing up and then take it down a week or two later. So I bought mine before Thanksgiving, stuck it in a bucket of water outside.
Mm-hmm.
The Saturday of Thanksgiving weekend, we brought it in and set it up and decorated it, and I just took it down just a few days ago.
And
it was happy.
So what kind was it? Do you remember?
It was some kind of a fir. I think we paid about $30 for a 6-foot tree. So I forget whether it was might have been a Fraser fir.
Oh, could be. And actually, firs probably hang under their needles a lot better than some,
it
too.
It was some needles, and it gobbled a lot of water. I had to fill up the water tank every day for about 2 weeks, and that suddenly really slowed down, and I worried that I'd forgotten it a little too long, and it had sealed up, so we cut the end off, and it still didn't drink much water. So I think it probably was catching up on the deficit from having been sitting on the lot. So I just wanted to share that.
No, that's good. And actually, you did all the right things as far as cutting off the end so that it actually can take up some water. So you did all the right things. So that's great.
So it was nice having, you know, the amount of effort we put into decorating it and taking it down was spread out over a longer, enjoyable period of time, and it means less you know, stuff to have to do closer to home. Mm-hmm. My second experiment was during the ice storm. We have a couple of big fir trees with long branches with lots of needles at the ends of the branches. And it was only about 10 o'clock in the morning, and I had just gone outside to run some errands, and I heard the first branch go.
Oh, no.
And then it was a cascade effect. It landed on the branch below, and that was too much, and we had lost six branches, you know, domino effect. So I thought to myself, you know, it's raining outside, so it's warm enough for the water to be water, but the ice is building up, and I thought, I'll experiment. Because if you can defrost a turkey using cold water in your sink, maybe I can defrost my tree using cold water on the hose. So I got the hose up outside, experimented on a little bush where it wouldn't be drastic, and I was able to melt some of the ice off the bushes. So I went out and I hosed down the parts of the fir tree that I could reach. I didn't get all the ice off, but I think I may have saved some branches. So that's my other
So that's interesting. I never thought about that. Yeah, that's interesting.
You have to have the right temperature conditions. And since it was raining.
Right, as long as it's, yeah, otherwise you're just creating more of a problem.
And I didn't get all the ice off. And I got kind of damp. But
your tree appreciated it, I'm sure. So that's good.
Well,
that's interesting.
I don't know that I saved it, but I didn't really want to lose any more branches. They'll probably fall down the next time we have an ice storm. The tree's only going to get longer branches, but anyway, I just thought I would share that. Thanks.
I appreciate that.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for the call.
That's a great thing about gardeners. You know, they're willing to try something. Just try it. See what happens. And
well,
that's
you
how we learn.
With a thing like that, what have you got to lose,
yeah,
really?
Right.
And if you can prevent further damage, that seems like that's a good thing. And it's really, it is difficult because you get the weight of the ice building up, and some plants will take it fairly well,
right,
and others, particularly like the pines, they just seem to get so weighted down because they accumulate it more, and they're not that, the branches aren't that strong.
Yeah. They'll take some, but then, and I think that's the other thing that sort of leads us back to, you know, when you do plant a tree, I know it's real tough sometimes to prune it when it's brand new and it's a little baby and you think it needs to grow. But that's really the time to look at it and look at its structure. And is this going to be a structurally sound plant? And so you don't want any really narrow branch angles. So if they're really narrow to the stem, those are the ones that are going to break. New tree, that's when you start pruning it. That's when you start training it. So that, you know, 30 years from now, when we do get an ice storm, it's better apt to tolerate it.
And again, to go back to an earlier caller raised this point, if you had a plant that was damaged and you had a branch that was that was snapped off and you've got a spike from the old part hanging off there, you really should go and you should trim that flush to the tree.
Yeah. You don't necessarily flush. There's actually a little bit of a ridge underneath it.
Yeah,
so you're not really doing a flush cut. But what you're trying to do is sort of clean it up. You don't want to, rather than having all that jagged stuff or a big stub sticking out or something like that.
Something you don't. You want to avoid having something that would collect and hold moisture.
And it's just going to be easier for the plant to sort of heal over that, too, which is really what you're wanting to do. But so they can tolerate some of that. So don't give up on the tree.
Okay. Next up, we have someone on a cell phone, line 2. Hello.
Hi, I just wanted to mention that, in fact, it's a known and well-used procedure in Florida to spray water on orange trees when there's a frost. In fact, that's basically how most horticulturalists who raise fruit deal with frost, is by just keep running water on it, and it can't get below freezing unless it gets really, really cold, and then, of course, not much you can do. But
Right. So it does depend on the temperature. Right. But, yeah, right at that freezing point, you can sort of get away with that.
Okay. I guess I did also think about that same thing, seeing footage of times when it was at freezing or getting near freezing, and what they do is they put big sprinklers out, like you would use to water a golf course or something, and they continue to douse the plants, and apparently that does happen.
But we're talking about between freezing and not freezing. We're talking about that 32, 31, 30, somewhere in there. We're not talking about, you know, 12 below. Zero. It's not really going to help you a whole lot. I mean, we're just talking about that, right, which can happen in the citrus areas.
All right. We have about 15 minutes left in this hour with Sandy Mason. She's horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. If you have questions about lawn and garden care, things that grow in the home landscape, trees, shrubs, flowers, vegetables, houseplants, any and all of that, you just give us a call, 333-9455. Toll free, 800-222-9455. I know this is a little bit early, but just for those people who are planning their spring, what would be the time that you could think about doing your first fertilizing of the grass in the spring?
Yeah, we're actually a little, I know April rolls around, people always think they need to start fertilizing, but generally what we recommend is a late fall fertilization, like in November, mm-hmm. and then wait until about the 1st of May to do your first spring fertilization. And that's really thinking the idea is the grass seems to have less disease problems if you sort of wait a little bit, and certainly that late fall fertilization is enough to help it green up come springtime. So a little bit different on that. But, you know, soon we'll start thinking about weed control and all that. Doesn't that sound good? You start thinking about all these things going on. Well, that means it's spring.
Well, that's, I guess I'm sort of thinking about it because there are a couple little areas in my yard where I started some grass from seed, mm-hmm. and I was having a lot of problems with weeds competing with mm-hmm. the grass. So at least in these two places, what I did last fall, I'm not sure when I did it. Maybe it was in September, maybe.
Yeah,
I used something that was one of these combination products mm-hmm. that had some weed control and had some fertilizer, and I put that on there, and it didn't seem to do anything. So so this time, so the spring, and I have some of that stuff left, so I figure, well, okay, I can in the spring, I can put some more on and see if that would do anything. But it really didn't. I was really disappointed because there were a lot of broadleaf weeds in there with the grass, and it didn't seem to there were some dandelions and some other stuff in there, and it didn't seem to do a terribly good knockdown of the weeds.
You know, it is one of those things, as long as, and I would think in September this probably would have been the case, is, you know, the weeds have to be actively growing in order for the herbicides to really work very well. So if it's too hot, too dry, mm-hmm. Either too cold, those kinds of things, and the weed isn't actively growing, they don't do a very good job of taking it in. So I don't know if that was necessarily the case, but that might be one reason why they fail. Or maybe they did a little better job than you thought. It just took longer than
well,
you
hoped. Well, that may be. Maybe that's the thing. I went out the next day
slower.
Expecting, okay.
They're supposed to be gone.
Supposed to be gone now. They're supposed to completely vanish overnight. That may be it.
Yeah, it could be.
Let's talk to somebody else. Champagne, line one.
Hi. Mm-hmm. I have a prairie garden, which I need to move to a new spot.
Mm-hmm.
So there are probably 20 to 30 different species of forbs and grasses. And my question is, what would be the best time to move those, before or after they start to green up? And do you have any tips for dealing with the taproots?
Yeah, wow. I was just about to say, have you ever dug up a prairie plant?
Yeah.
Not always the easiest thing. Now, some of them won't be easy, like coneflowers and some of the forbs you'll find, they're not that hard. But some of the grasses you'll find, it's like cutting through sod. I mean, it really is. They're a little tough. I would do it in the springtime. And when they first start to green up or you see what's going on in there, and I think you'll find that most of them, and I've even moved some things like prairie dock and some of those that actually have a very long taproot, but seem to still do very well even when I've moved them. So I think if you do it early enough and then really watch their aftercare, do a little watering. I know eventually they'll be drought-loving plants or willing to survive droughts. But in that very beginning, I'd really kind of watch them that way. And I don't know if you have any seeds out there. That would be the other thing I'd be collecting. And then as you move these plants, I'd also be thinking about moving the seeds with them.
Okay. All right. Thanks very much. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And again, we certainly have time and we have phone lines open. If you want to call in here, talk with Sandy, 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. Anything else we could talk about? Sort of
well,
on your mind?
You know, there's always things we can talk about. No. I think probably one of the things is people sort of start thinking about their gardens. And I just got back from Florida, which I know you're really, really, you know, feeling sorry for me that I got back from Florida. No, you're not. Maybe not.
No,
at
no,
any rate,
not at all.
You know, but the interesting thing was I was trying to find some information about growing citrus trees. I don't know a whole lot being from Illinois and stuff. So, you know, the nice thing is I checked with the University of Florida Extension down there. And I just thought, isn't that a wonderful thing? That here a girl from Illinois can zip on down to Florida and start asking questions. And they sent me all this wonderful information about what kind of citrus to grow and how to take care of them and stuff. To me, that's just one of those things that I think it's the U of I Extension, actually any of the Extension offices, you know, use them. You know, that's what we're here for. You're starting to plan, make decisions. Check out your local Extension office. It's usually under University of Illinois or under the county. So whatever county you're in, you can usually find out the Extension office. And they're, you know, even if I am involved in them, I still think they're a great resource. I was just so happy to get the info.
And this really is the time to start thinking about what it is that you're going to want to do if you need to change something or if you have some sort of area you're thinking, well, I'd like to develop this in a certain way. I mean, now is really the time to think before you get to the point where you're going to go out to buy the plants. It's just sort of start thinking about what exactly you would like to look like and what would what would be the best plants for the place. And, you know, come up with a prospective list of kind of things that you'd like to do and start fooling around and drawing out little plans and just kind of see how
it's a great way to get through the winter.
Absolutely. All right. We have another phone caller here, someone on a cell phone, line one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Yes, I was calling to see where I can take a soil sample. There's a area in front of my house where I have planted multiple things and they all die. And I was wondering if I could get the soil checked.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. That's a really good place to start. See what's going on with the soil. And usually you can check on your yellow pages under soil or soil testing. And pretty much every area has some soil lab that and you can even check out some of the FS offices. Sometimes those will they can help you out on finding out where your local soil lab is. And it's a great place, you know, $6 or $8 depending on where you send it. And it's a great place to start out.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. All right. And Piatt County, this is someone else here. Line number four. Hello.
Good morning. Mm-hmm. Not that I'm a worrywart or anything, but I was just wondering, I planted a lot of bulbs this fall, and is this rain, somehow I have a vision of, you know, the saturated ground, and is it going to affect daffodil bulbs and things?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think it's a good question because, you know, a lot of those really don't like heavily saturated soil. So if they were actually sitting in water for a long time, then you may find you might have some problems.
No, they're not sitting in water. I just wondered if the fact that, you know, we've had so much rain, and of course we'll have more, you know, by the time March gets around.
Yeah. I think if you're in a halfway well-drained area, as in you're not seeing puddles, if there's puddles there, then I think, you know, well, now frozen puddles there, then there may be some issues.
Okay.
But I think as long as that's not a problem, I think you'll still be all right because most of those will tolerate some of that. It's just not they don't tolerate standing water very well.
Okay, thank you so much.
Yeah. So don't worry. It's okay.
Thanks. Bye.
When we do have conditions like that we've had, say, over the last week where you do, you know, one day you have temperatures in the 60s and then it's suddenly 2 days later it's in single digits. Is there anything that you can do to insulate plants, or are there particular plants you ought to be thinking about trying to insulate them a little bit from those wild sort of swings?
Right. I think any of the broadleaf evergreens would be the ones that I would be most concerned about. So things like rhododendrons, boxwood, some of those. It's really hard on plants when we get these tremendous fluctuations. For a lot of the deciduous plants, they're dormant enough now that it's probably not a big issue unless we got a really extended period of warm weather. So plants would just as soon have it be cold and stay cold. I mean, it's really much better for them. So I would think about those kinds of plants, rhododendrons, boxwoods, anything that's a broadleaf evergreen, especially if it's a new one. I might be thinking about maybe erecting something, even if it's like burlap or if you have leftover pine boughs from your Christmas tree or whatever. Just try to protect them. And, you know, sun may sound like a good idea, but maybe protect them from that sun if it really gets to be 64 or above, because you really want them to stay cold right now. So those would be the plants I'd be concerned about. Also, if you've got roses in rose cones, I'd be really, if it gets that warm, I'd be making sure I've got holes in those rose cones or something so that it doesn't get too warm inside.
Well, that would be another thing that I would be concerned about if you've done that or anything else where what you're trying to do is provide a little insulation for the plant to keep it warm.
Right.
If it suddenly gets really warm, then are you going to have a problem?
Right. And that's why I would, the rose cones work well for some folks, but I think a better thing is to use something like shredded leaves or those kinds of insulators, which help to insulate to some extent, but they aren't going to capture the heat the way we are with some things like rose cones and some of those. So that would be the kind of thing I'd be a little bit concerned.
Yeah. And then you might, of course, have to do something, use chicken wire or something like that to hold the stuff around the plant, maybe.
Yeah, right, with all the wind and everything.
So that doesn't blow, you know, you don't carefully mount it up there, and then the next time you go out there, you find it, it's all blown away.
Right.
You have to do something like that.
And if it's warm enough, you know, when it's freezing, but there are things called wilt-proof and some of the things that help those broadleaf evergreens or even evergreens to make it through the winter so they don't lose so much moisture. Mm-hmm. So that's something else you could do.
All right. You said that one of the things that maybe you could do, if you get a good day and you do want to be outside, one of the things you could be doing is pruning.
Mm-hmm.
Any general sorts of tips that you can give about that?
Mm-hmm. I think the one thing, pruning is one of those things, you just got to do it. I know people get really nervous and they just do it. And then you'll learn. You'll understand. So get some basic ideas of what you need to do. If it's something that's early blooming, as I said before, anything that blooms before, say, June 15th, those are blooming on old wood. So you don't want to prune those now. You're just going to be cutting off the old flower buds. Not going to kill the plant necessarily, but you want to have flowers for this year. So that would be one thing. If it blooms after about mid-June, then you know it's blooming on new wood and it's not going to be a big issue for you. You can go ahead and prune it now. And not leaving the big stubs. Don't be too concerned about, you know, for some of these plants, you know, I take them absolutely right down to the ground. I used to leave these stubs, these, you know, 6 to 8 inches, you know, thinking I was really helping the plant, but then you just end up with these stubs. So there's plant red twig dogwoods I've done that with. I've done that with spireas and honeysuckles and stuff where you really just take them and then they just sucker up from the bottom. They look so much better. I mean, a lot of plants just look better, especially a lot of the shrubs I just mentioned. If they're pruned like every 3 or 4 years, just prune them down.
Okay. Want to mention real quick one last time the events that you talked about a little bit earlier?
Yes. March 5th is our Garden Day, and lots of great speakers. It's going to be at the Holiday Inn in Urbana, and I know people really enjoy that. So that's March 5th, the Holiday Inn. They can give us a call at 217-333-7672. And then Herb Day is January 29th, so that's coming up. That's always a great event as well. And that they can also give us a call. We'd be glad to help them out with that info.
Very good. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
We'll see you again next month. Sandy Mason, she's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. Here once a month on a Tuesday, we talk about lawn and garden care, things that grow in the home landscape. Programming on this station is made possible in part by a grant from the Thrifty Nichols American Classifieds, distributed each Thursday in over 100 towns in East Central Illinois, on the web at AmericanClassifieds.com. The program today also made possible by a grant from the Living Yoga Center in downtown Champaign, offering a variety of classes designed to help students bring balance into their lives by finding strength and serenity through the practice of yoga. The winter schedule has already begun. New introductory classes will begin on January 18th, and I think that's today. For more information, you can call 384-5829 or visit their website at www.livingyogacenter.net. Later today on the Afternoon Magazine, Celeste Quinn talks with two investigative journalists who will offer their insights into healthcare in America. Donald Bartlett and James Steele are winners of the Pulitzer Prize. They're authors of 7 books. Their latest is titled Critical Condition, How Healthcare in America Became Big Business and Bad Medicine. That'll be in the 1 o'clock hour of the Afternoon Magazine. The show gets underway at noon here on AM 580. Celeste Quinn is the host. Next hour of our program, we'll be talking about education reform with Dr. James Comer from Yale University, well known in this field. We'll talk about his model for reforming troubled schools and helping kids. That'll be in the next part of the show. First, though, we'll break for an update on the news and the markets, so stay tuned.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 85 years.